guys. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper.
This is Joe Bob Briggs.
This is Jeffrey Combs.
Hey, this is Scotty in from Anthrax.
Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau.
Hi, this is Doc Bradley. You're listening to Quality Time.
You're listening to Quality Time.
Quality Time Broadcast.
And you're listening to Quality Time.
Quality Time Podcast.
I'm saying this under duress.
You better keep listening or I will tear your soul apart.
So, next,
what are we talking about?
I don't know. We're back
we're
to Remo
about the
Williams.
Crow too. Let's go back to the
Listen,
Crow.
We're hopping
the
back into
Electric Boogaloo.
We're on episode 2 at this point, okay? Episode 2. Welcome back, everybody. We're with Chris.
Hey, oh, new God. Episode.
We're with
Hey, it's not me. I'm Wilford Brimley on this one. I'm Wilford Brimley.
I'm Eric. This is we have Chris Lawrence as guest, and of course, Jeremy and Ashley are both
I'm
here.
I'm Wilford Brimley. Wow.
So, we're in the midst of training Remo Williams with the very, very not politically correct Chun, played by Joel Grey, a white man dressed in yellow face. And
can we go back to the fact that Joel Grey is actually the father of Jennifer Grey?
Yeah, Chris mentioned that.
From Dirty Dancing and Red Dawn.
Okay.
Red Dawn, baby.
Another.
Now, I wasn't so shocked so much that Jennifer Grey was his daughter. I was really shocked the fact that he actually had sex with a woman and wasn't always gay. I mean, it's almost like finding that like Elton John wasn't gay at one point in his life.
Oh, man. Jeremy, this is why we have you on the show, for these little tidbits of advice, things that really bring everybody back to center. Thank you for that, sir.
I have a philosophy, a theory more.
It's my philosophy.
I have a theory about some of these guys, be it Freddie Mercury or David Bowie or Joel Grey or Elton John, is that all these guys did at one point did have sex with women, and I think they just got bored of pussy.
Okay.
Dude, David Bowie was married to Amon before he died. He was all over the map, but like he was definitely straight.
Well, if it's one thing,
he was into women.
I would say the most you talk about, like, you know, a gay guy who's had, you know, sex with women before. And I think the most, if you really want to be down with the boys, you eventually just have to be like, you know, I only fuck dudes. That's just how you have to go. If you want to be ultra masculine, being gay is the most, like, masculine thing you could do, actually.
Feel like Prince really talked about this in his song, When Crows Cry.
And then there's my theory.
It can't rain all the time.
and then there's my theory on party gay.
Okay, here we go. I can't wait. More of Jeremy's theories.
Is that, look, if you're partying like for hours on end and you're like, you're so high on like coke and meth and heroin and like a Seagram's wine cooler, that you'll pretty much just fuck anything.
That is true. You throw a couple of fucking wine spirits up in this pussy and daddy's gonna fuck that fleshlight that looks like a dog. So yeah, 100%. I'm into it.
The pocket poochie. I'm definitely getting you one for Christmas.
Have you guys seen the pocket poochie? The fleshlight for your dog? It has suction
cups.
I'm
the one that shared it, yes.
Oh yeah.
Ashley, is it really for dogs or people?
Yeah, it's for dogs. Wink.
Well, I was gonna say men are dogs. Yeah, for them.
Got him again, Ash. Got him again.
I'm trying so hard.
Gosh, yeah. It's for me. My 2021 is filled with Baldos and fucking dog pussies. At this point, that's where I'm going with this year.
I only want the two B's, Baldos and Blue Chews. You know what I mean, boys?
Oh, man. Are you familiar with the Baldo, Chris?
No, but I can only imagine what it is.
Oh, well, you don't even have to imagine. I'd be happy to show you. The Baldo wonderful device where it's, you know, one thing that's been left out of sex all these years is the use of your balls in sex. So the Baldo fixes...
Speak for yourself.
The Baldo fixes that problem, and I just wanted to show you a bit of the Baldo here. Let me find the main... Yep, here we go. Let's join the Baldo revolution real quick, Christopher. I want you to see...
I can't even... Oh, can we just go back to talking about yellow face
We're in episode two. Here, listen.
Mankind. It was 28,000 years old. Since then, there have been stone ones, wooden ones, bone ones, leather ones, rubber ones, silicone ones, glass ones, metal ones, long ones, short ones, vibrating ones, pink ones, purple ones, black ones, ribbed ones. For the last 28,000 years, dildos have been the same. Nothing has changed. They are all the same. Our determined engineers decided to try and do something about this. What if a completely new way of having sex could be invented?
Something that makes them rigid enough for penetration, but something that still keeps them exposed so that the nerve endings can still be stimulated freely.
Over the next 3 years, our engineers worked furiously to create such a device. Something that would be easy and painless to put on and take off. Something that would stretch to fit most men's balls.
Hooray!
The Baldo.
Can I just...
Introducing the Baldo.
So it makes a dick out of your balls.
And can
so
I just
real?
Say,
yeah, it's
a real
thing. You could buy this. You could buy this right now. It is available for purchase, the Baldo. So you
can
stick your balls
in people.
Can I
just say how much it bothers me that men come up with this fucking weird device? They are happy and willing to put it on, but God forbid you ask them to wear a condom. I just don't understand.
Hey, baby, listen.
I won't wear a condom, but I will put this on my dick.
Yo, check this out. One thing you ain't gonna get pregnant from my balls, all right? I stick the ball down.
That is where you get pregnant from. It starts in the balls.
Nope, it ain't where the hole it comes out of. I know about my own anatomy enough.
No, wait, is the theory there you're doing it like a double thing?
Stick it on there and then your balls stick out of the side of it, and then you penetrate with it and the sides of your balls get inside of the pussy that way.
Oh my God.
Chris. I prefer the book series of Where's Baldo?
Yeah. So, I only listen to Where's Waldo on CD. That's the only way I'll enjoy my Where's Waldo.
I also like the erotic novel on Baldo Pond.
Baldo Pond.
Baldo Pond.
You old poo with your Baldos. You'll never learn how to fish.
So
I don't even know.
We're continuing with the movie. Now, listen, Chun is up on the rooftop. He's trying to teach Remo Williams a little bit about fear.
Can you give me like 10 more seconds?
10 seconds, go.
Okay, Jane Fonda from on a Baldo Pond. Daddy never cared. All he cares about is his Baldo.
Jane Fonda. Hey, I'm Jane Fonda. I'm Jerry Williams, right. Jane Fonda. So he then goes up on the roof with Chun, Remo Williams. He's getting trained by this white guy playing an Asian man in yellow face. And they're on the roof. They're playing on the ledge here and telling him how to deal with fear. Here we go.
Fear is nothing more than a feeling. You feel hot, you feel hungry, you feel angry, you feel afraid. Fear can never kill you.
And they start walking around the rooftops on the edge, but very slowly, because Remo, he's not there yet, you know. He can't deal with the fear yet, but he's getting better. It's a little baby step here.
It's like all these fucking parkour kids feel like they're fucking super fucking martial artists now or something.
He's teaching
or,
about a
or
platform.
Even worse is like they'll dress up in like a superhero costume called Peter Parkour.
Peter Parkour. Yeah. So meanwhile, Harold is looking up some more information on Harp and George Grove. When he sees someone trying to access the data, who ends up being Major Rayner or Captain Janeway from Star Trek Voyager, she's frustrated that she can't get access to the Harp files. Cost overruns in the database she doesn't have access to, so she brings it up with her superiors, and she kind of gets glass ceilinged right here, and here's a little audio clip from that.
I really would appreciate action by the time I return from Fort Baxter.
Fort Baxter?
The AR-60 test? Grove Infantry Assault Rifle?
Of course. The AR-60. You have a job to do. But, Rayner, let me give you a word of advice. Never feel you have to overdo it. Do you know what I mean? It makes no difference to me that you're a woman.
Also, have you seen this Baldo that I just purchased? It allows me to put my balls inside of you. I hope I'm not being too much of a chauvinist right now.
I don't even know how we have gone from talking about like the origins of this book series to talking about Baldos.
How about Baldo Masters of the Seventh Dimension?
What? I don't know what you're talking
Baldo
about.
Baldo Masters.
Oh, my God.
Starring Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf. Okay. All right.
Let's make an even bigger leap. Let's bring in the Baldo with the pocket poochie, and we've got our Baldos.
I think we've got our Baldos crossed now.
Baldaroo Bonsai in the...
Everything just has Baldo in it now.
What about?
I don't even know anymore.
What about two guys?
I know how the world ends, and I pretty much know God well enough that the thing that finally makes him snap is somebody using a Baldo on a poochie, whatever.
Pussy.
Thing.
There you go. That's what it is.
Let's talk about the fact that
it's worse than Sodom.
I like this movie, but 40 minutes of this movie is devoted to training.
Yes.
Whereas, like, you get, like, really upset with movies that show you training montage, and you're like, oh, I want to see more of Danny LaRusso getting trained in the Karate Kid. No, you don't.
No,
that's what this is. Like,
I think it's worth noting this movie was in dire need of a training montage, and there is none. They were like, nope, we're going to show you how he learns how to fucking stand on poles. We're going to show you how he can walk on ledges. Is he going to use this any in the final scene? No, he's not. None of this.
Yeah. It needed Mulan treatment.
Yeah. You want to Eye of the Tiger the hell out of this movie.
Yes.
Like, you want 3.5 minutes, and then let's just start ripping eyes out of people's heads.
Exactly.
Like, let's go.
God. So
I want to see like 5-minute montage that's just them sitting watching, daytime soaps.
Yes. Well, we're coming to that soon enough. So Remo is coming along nicely and becoming more acrobatic. He gives him a Korean fingerboard to strengthen his fingertips on it. And
By the way, I will say this. Screw you, Quentin Tarantino. Fred Ward did it first.
Yeah, that is true. Plucking eyeballs out and practicing on fucking boards like that. So
yeah. Can you imagine like Quentin Tarantino going? Of course, Kurosawa is one of my biggest influences, and of course, the 1985 film Remo Williams: The Adventure Begins.
Why don't we just have this fucking Harry Potter bitch say, oh, I've never seen the movie Troll. I don't know where I got the name from.
So Chun goes on to tell him that the highest public service in the world.
Professional assassination. It's the highest form of public service. So I will persevere.
So he goes on to talk about some more bullshit, but at the end of this, he makes this really bad joke, and I wanted to share that.
Because it speeds them on the way to the grave.
He does this laugh. This laugh is, by the way, it makes me laugh so hard, is this little laugh he does, where it's like...
That's your new ring. That should be your ringtone whenever Restivo calls. That's your ringtone.
Vehicle coming.
I love it. That I have that saved as an audio bite called Queer Laugh. That's all that it's called.
Can I say that's also my favorite scene from the movie The Watchmen, where the was the guy with like the mask actually shoots JFK from the grassy knoll, and he's like, "Yeah, got him." So,
oh, you're talking about the comedian?
Yeah, the comedian. Yeah. I just called him the mask guy.
Is that what's going to be the rest of this podcast, Eric? Is you playing that clip for 45 minutes?
Yes.
They were going to use that for the Pillsbury Doughboy. Actually, that's what they were going to use.
By men in. It's very melodic. I like it. So later that night, Chun is watching some soap operas, and old Remo Williams just doesn't get it.
What are you watching?
Your country's one and only contribution to the art. It concerns family, love, honor, and courage, all that is noblest in the human spirit.
It's a soap opera, for Christ's sake.
Shh! You've spoiled it.
So he loves watching soap operas. His only weakness, American soap operas, which
Can I tell you about the only soap opera I ever watched?
Yeah.
That was the one with the witch and the midget that they talked to each other.
That was a doll that came to life.
Yeah. But it was a midget.
Yeah, but it was a midget.
What was the name of that? It was like not Sunsets. It was like something like that. It was like some
Was the Not, bold and the bitchy remember. Or something?
Yeah. Ashley, you all right? Are we boring you?
No, I am just so painfully hung over that I'm having a hard time stringing thoughts
together. And we're like, and you're like, you know what the best movie for a hangover is? Remo Williams, The Adventure.
Look, I didn't want to hurt your feelings, but like I told you before we started, I had to restart this movie 5 different times just it's to okay. try and make it through.
I was going to say Eraserhead.
So he makes Remo Williams ninja warrior his way through this studio apartment, going up and down balance beams and jumping on the tops of poles to get to the second story. But when he tells him to come down, he goes, "No problem, you fucking Asian bitch." And then he goes like, but he turns the lights off and immediately falls down. He's like, "You must rely on what you know, not what you see." So I didn't pull audio for that, but I felt like that was just an accurate portrayal of what he said. Meanwhile, some soldiers are testing some of the new AR-60 guns. One misfires and blows a fucking soldier's face off while he's trying to shoot it. And I'll let you know that the grunts don't think this is the best type of machinery.
About this new weapon, sir, I want to tell you something. It's useless, sir.
Anyway, so
that guy's yelling immediately took me back to our episode with Justin Schlegel of DEF CON 4.
Yes, it does sound like the guy from DEF CON 4.
Yeah, the guy when he yells and wait, what was her name? Jordan? He's like, Jordan, come on. No, put it down now.
Jordan!
This is solid acting across the board.
I like that guy was just like, this is my big shot. I'm in Remo Williams. I gotta fucking nail this line. And they were like, I feel like that was like his third take. That was his most withdrawn that he could have done. Like, he was just like, the first two were so much higher. He's like, listen, I know you put me in here, but I think this is what my character is really feeling at this moment.
So it's like that dude watched George C. Scott's speech from Patton and Robert Duvall from Apocalypse Now. He's like, look, I'm gonna nail the fuck out of this line. This is what we're gonna do.
And that's when the black guy who's actually an alien tells him that he should like quit the Corps, but he's like, I've got no place to go and I'm white, and he's like, well, I don't care if you're white. You can control people within their dreams.
Okay.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. We can't fix him, and we won't at this point. He's
Jeremy,
too far along.
I love you so much, but find help.
So the general calls George Grove to tell him that the AR-60 is a little dangerous, and it kind of murdered one of the soldiers just from shooting around, and he tells him to lose the report and bury it. Next, we see Remo training on a Ferris wheel where he's hanging from the bottom of the car. It's a kind of fun scene where he has to crawl all around it. It's fun. It's more training.
It's
That's
practical
what it is.
Effects, too. Like, this is the other thing I liked about this movie. There are a lot of practical effects and stunt work that happens in it. And actually, Fred Ward did a lot of his own stunts in this movie.
Oh, thank God.
Granted, a lot of it was him just opening a beer or whatever.
Yeah. He was just like, wait a minute.
Or having that little plate with his fingers and shit.
Yeah, the little thing they don't tell you is that he had to shave his own mustache. It wasn't actually plastic surgery. He actually did that.
Yeah. They were like, look, Sigourney Weaver's going to do this in 1991 in Alien 3. We want you to be brave, and we want you to shave that mustache off.
All right, Chris. I like that. That was a good bit. That was a good bit, man. So next we see as they walk out of the Ferris wheel, they walk past a little carny who's played by William Hickey. Of course, he's from The Nightmare Before Christmas and Tales from the Crypt, the original one. Here's a little bit of William Hickey as Remo and Chun walk by.
You want to make your grandchildren happy? Drop a hoop on a bottle, win a prize, and you're going to see their little faces light up.
So, yeah, I love William Hickey. By the way, also another thing, I know you mentioned that other film that he was in. My favorite William Hickey is from the Tales from the Crypt episode where he plays a rich old man, but the lady he's sleeping with doesn't want to marry him because he's old. So he spends all of his money to become a young man, but he still has William Hickey's voice. He's like, I know what I'm talking about. I got like this. And but he has a wonderful body. And she leaves him for the other guy who's now rich, which is very, very funny, which just goes to prove that money always wins over looks every single time.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth? Hey, wasn't he also in Major Payne? Wasn't he the headmaster in Major Payne with one of the Wayans brothers?
I believe
so. Where he's
like
playing and catching with butterflies?
Fun story about Major Payne. I was watching it as a child, you know, in the 90s, and my grandfather came in and watched 5 minutes of it and said this was an unchristian movie and we weren't allowed to watch it.
I am correct. It is William Hickey. He is Dr. Phillips. He's the headmaster in Major Payne.
There you go.
So I've never watched Major Payne in its entirety because I watched the first half hour and then he saw Damon Wayans cursing at children and we were no longer allowed to watch it at Grandpa Reber's house. So, it was fun.
He would rather you guys get cursed at home in real life. I get it.
Exactly. Like, you know what? I was just like, I don't know. None of these words are new, Grandpa. Dad says them every night. And so, you know, he didn't know. It was fun. So,
Dad abuses your daughter on the regular in a mental way.
So Chun nails the ring toss game and like sinks every single one in like karate fashion and wins a giant like Pink Panther style bear that he's like, I love this. This is mine. And so he's very, very tickled by that.
Which also makes me laugh. Sorry about the Pink Panther component, because do you guys not feel that the whole time watching these two interact on screen together, you immediately think of Clouseau and Kato from the Pink Panther movies from like the 60s and 70s?
No, I see where that's coming from. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. I like that.
Good pull.
And I'm pretty sure Peter Sellers is going to beat Bruce Lee.
It all comes around.
Chun then tests more of Remo's bullet dodging skills. He's getting pretty good at it, but Remo miscalculates, saying that he fired all of his bullets, but no, he goes, I reloaded. And then that was pretty dumb on Remo's part. Next we see George getting grilled by Major Rayner Fleming, and she's fucking has him over the fucking coals here. Harold is worried that she's getting too close and the supercomputer thinks that she's going to get murdered and get herself killed. So they send Remo Williams now, has the ability to hidden tiger. Oh, there's one more training part where Remo now has the ability to basically run softly like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and can float while he runs. And you know what? Chun is like, he's really getting it. He's really getting it. He's starting to become proud of him.
Is this the bit where he's talking to the other guy,
yeah,
from
McClure.
Cure, and he
yes.
says, when will he be ready? And he's like in 35 years or something like this.
Yeah.
Or is that another part?
No, yeah. I think it's this part.
I'm thinking 35 years, he's going to be 85 years old. Like, what does he think he's going to do then? It's like a...
Yeah, well, speaking of age, Remo then asks Chin how old he is, and he says, for a mountain, very young, for a man, just right. Which was the original slogan that maybe you didn't know this for Secret for Women, young enough for a mountain, but just right for a... for a man. I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking that was Irish Spring.
Yes.
For a mountain just right.
as Madonna might say, you can't doodle with a wet noodle.
Yes, but all this
Irish Spring.
Honestly, though, all this training has been really fucking up Remo Williams' head because he hasn't got any pussy lately. So here's a little bit about him not getting pussy.
You want to make your grandchildren happy.
But yeah, what I'm saying is, I've been cooped up in this rat hole.
No, that's
for
the bit. That's right there. You
want to
make your grandchildren?
Yeah, sex. Now you're cooking. I mean, maybe it's the breathing and the rice. And
lesson 36.
36?
The 20 steps designed to bring a woman to sexual ecstasy. Though I personally have rarely found it necessary to go beyond 7 to achieve bliss.
Well, go on, I'm listening.
With the left hand, you locate the woman's pulse. Then with the middle finger, and tapping in time with the pulse.
Then what?
Then you may put the rice in a bowl and we may eat.
All right, giving him the how-to on how to fucking finger bang right there. How to finger bang a lady's wrist.
I have been waiting to talk about this part.
Okay. Let's strap in, brother.
Confessional. You ever like know, oh yeah, it's from the movies, it can't possibly be real, but you want to try it anyway?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely tried that on my 11th grade girlfriend. I was just like, she's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm just giving you a little massage, and I just tried that, and she's like, what's going on? I was like, fuck you, Asian Joel Gray.
Are you telling me this white guy dressed as an Asian lied to me in this 85 movie with Fred Ward? What
are you telling
this
me?
This is all I know.
it's like what to say, Seth Rogen in Knocked Up. All he knows is the dice. That's all I knew. I just knew that.
The dance move.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
This
made me so uncomfortable.
Yeah, have you ever had somebody finger bang your wrist, Ashley?
I've definitely gotten carpal tunnel from jacking someone else off. But no, I've never had someone try to keep the beat with my pulse to them pumping and dumping in me. So no, I've never had that happen, Baldo.
Oh, okay. All right.
This is almost as upsetting as if finding out that deep throat wasn't true and the G-spot wasn't in the back of a woman's throat.
Ugh, classic.
Oh, well, the G-spot's in the back of my throat. But,
whoa. Hell yeah.
That's
hit
the score. For.
Hit that uvula, hun.
Yeah.
Hey, like a boxing bag.
So, I want to gag. I want to choke. I want you to touch that dangly thing in the back of my throat.
Come on, Cardi. You know, use your words. Use your words. Next, Remo goes to slow down Rainer so she doesn't get murdered. She's being spied on by some bad guys, one with a diamond tooth, and he ends up choking that guy who's looking at him and notices his diamond tooth when a sassy young black police officer says, "Hey, you stop choking that man on my streets! Get out of here!" It was a fun scene.
By the way, I will say the guy who plays Diamond Diamond Tooth Patrick Kilpatrick, by the way, mm-hmm. in a lot of other great movies. He's in Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis. He's in Minority Report.
Yeah. He's one of the other guys.
He's in the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. What?
Yeah, he's one of the other guys. That's where I remember him from. He's one of the other Thought Police guys that comes after him. He's like a jetpack and everything, right?
Yeah, the jetpack guy. He's in Hard Target.
Oh, yeah, Hard Target, too.
Yeah, he gets
Rob Lowe in The Stand.
That's right. Yeah, he plays a bunch of, like, heavies. And he's actually from Orange, Virginia. So not too far away from here.
Yeah. Nice. He was also in the sequel to Minority Report, which is the U.S. Census.
I met him almost 20 years ago, and out of all of his photographs on his table, I couldn't pinpoint it until later, and I was very upset that I couldn't. I couldn't even remember The Stand, but turns out he is Leroy from the Toxic Avenger, and I think he quit because Lloyd Kaufman wanted him to point a shotgun at a baby during the restaurant scene. So.
That is true.
Oh my God.
Leroy, shut this dog up!
So he ends up choking that guy and then skates off. Next, we see the scumbag with the Diamond Tooth paying off some contractors to fuck with Remo, who's at the top of the Statue of Liberty, which at the time actually had a whole bunch of scaffolding around it and was getting repaired. They did do some shots for this scene with the Statue of Liberty as well as within a confined studio. Very good storyboarding work by the directors here. But the contractors attempt to knock him off and he at one point he's dangling by a vertical pole that he slides down as the contractors chase him through, thinking that he's dropped to his death. The boys decide to leave.
Okay, guys, it's Miller time.
But Remo didn't fall to his death. He's still super alive, and he makes his way off of the statue through a bunch of acrobatic moves and rope grabs, and he's able to jump on top of the evil contractor's elevator as they head down. He gets inside and fucking puts work on these clowns, not actually killing any of them, but stringing one on top of... by his wrist, but he puts it around his neck, and it feels like they changed the scene. They were like, it's clearly, I was like, holy shit, he just hung that guy out of a fucking thing, and then you look at the scene, he's like, it's around his leg. It's very odd, for sure.
Do you think this led to typecasting because he was so good with poles? They're like, oh, we have this pole scene in Tremors where he has to go on a pole, so he's number one, yeah. And Kevin Bacon, because he's in everything.
That is true. So he finally reaches the bottom to go deal with the Diamond Tooth guy, and he's going to run after him. But these guys have guns, and he's not the greatest at bullet dodging. I forget who the other guy is. It's not Sipowicz, but it's like another guy who plays a cop in a lot of movies who's chasing him and trying to shoot, and I can't remember his name for the life of me right now. But he's getting chased by a one dude, and he uses his light air walking to walk across wet concrete, and the guy chases after him and just immediately sinks in to the concrete. So
yeah. I will say, like, for a martial art where they talk about being an assassin and bring like, he doesn't murder any of these people, which he should absolutely 100% do. And number two, then he does the Sean Connery on Director Womack move and hangs the dude by the arm. So, like, at most you're talking about a shoulder displacement.
I don't like that. That's the classic. Jeremy and Todd, we call that the Thundar thing. Because Thundar, if you're not familiar with the Hanna-Barbera show Thundar, it was a He-Man knockoff that he had a lightning sword, like a lightsaber, and he would be like, fuck yeah, look at all these people he's about to chop up. And then he would like meet somebody, and he would always just kick them in the face instead of just killing him with the lightsaber that he's holding at all times.
It's like, you know how to stop a man's heart now. What are you doing?
It's like Thundar chops right through somebody. He's like, oh, all of a sudden I found out it was only a cyborg robot. It's not like I was actually killing anyone.
Yeah, because you can't kill anybody at a kid's show, you know?
Yeah.
And to get real serious about the 80s, it's really when we started like losing our testicular, any sort of integrity, was like, let's make a show about war. called G.I. Joe where nobody ever dies.
Yeah, yeah. Like, glorify like, war and show no murder in it at all.
It's yeah. like, we're shooting it's, lasers.
It's like, let's have a scene like, man, this war was so horrible. If only somebody had actually died during our fighting, you know?
The fun yeah. part about so. G.I. Joe is really they are the worst soldiers in the whole world. They can't kill anybody. Right? Like, they shouldn't have any government funding going to them at any time.
Yeah. You should like not be seeing the same enemy over and over again. That person should be dead.
What do you
it's
mean?
Kinda, it's kind of like the Death Star at the end of Star Wars, but everybody escapes the Death Star just in time.
Yeah. So. It's like, what do you mean you can't shoot the guy with the giant silver face mask that looks like a giant target? Like, you've never even tried to aim for it? I don't understand. Explain it to me. Explain it to me in layman's terms, Private. Why you couldn't shoot Cobra Commander or Destro, the guy who's just a giant silver head. You couldn't, you did you just, yeah.
He looks like a Baldo.
So, he finally reaches the bottom. The guy sinks in the concrete, and Chun takes care of another guy, but the Diamond Tooth fella is able to escape the Statue of Liberty and live another day. Now, Remo...
Die another day.
Yes. So, Remo gets his next visit, next mission, and it's to visit Grove Industries. He leaves Chun, says that if he fails and brings dishonor to Shinjatsu, that he will
Sinanju.
Kill him. Sinanju, I'm sorry. Stop correcting me on your made-up martial arts.
And then,
Simbazo. We'll just call Simbazo it Simbazo. Arts.
It's Simbazo.
You shoot things like off your armbands.
Yeah, it's called Gabagool, guys.
Yeah. The art of Simbazo is just spraying people with cum and piss. That's
I'm black now and I'm ready for office.
So
isn't that Guar? Isn't that Guaranu?
You Guaranu.
So isn't that the stuff that bats leave behind?
Yeah.
Guaranu.
So he and McCleary are on this mission, and they cut through the electric gate, and we learn that he has a fake arm that he got in Korea because he got blown up. So he's been walking around a regular fucking Happy Gilmore type situation. He's a fake fucking prosthetic arm. So we got a real amputee here. Remo has to then deal with the smartest dogs alive, where these three Dobermans chase him through a industrial complex. And they can climb ladders. It's very hilarious when they bring down the step down the step down steps by both latching onto it and bringing it down. It's a very comical scene of Remo trying to avoid and not hurt dogs, which I feel like he could kill with just his fingertips, but refuses to because he
Again,
loves
I thought,
animals.
I thought the dog stuff was good. Obviously, they had some trained dogs that did some of that stuff. And by the way, Low Down Dirty Shame, another Wayne's Brothers film, by the way, Keenan Ivory, totally stole from that scene, by the way, when he was doing stuff with dogs in that movie. So I totally, again, Remo Williams did it first. That's all I'm saying.
So
this movie inspired a generation.
He finally makes his way to see what the harp laser is, and it is a giant killer laser, but it tries to shoot him and then misses and then causes a giant explosion. Alarms go off as they all have to scoot out of there. He has to outrun the dogs one more time, going over Ninja Warrior / Prince of Persia style obstacles on what can only be described as OSHA's greatest workplace nightmare, where he's running. And he's able to eventually meet up with McCleary, who says, "What happened?" And he goes,
"What happened? Oh, man, I blew it.
Oh, and there's a giant explosion, but luckily McCleary has enough things he thinks that he can take them down. The cops and dogs are closing in. They have to go. As the dogs close in, they get McCleary, and McCleary gives them the fake arm, so the dogs rip off his fake arm while he starts up a bulldozer, crashes it through the electric fence, and makes a new way to get out. And as they're trying to escape the facility, sweet McCleary catches this... gunshot in the back. He's down, grabs the information from him, but unfortunately McCleary is not doing too well. So he hands him the information and says, "Get this to Smith." McCleary, though, not dead, wakes up inside of a hospital bed, captured by Grove's goons. They plan on torturing him, but McCleary decides to leave on his own terms, takes a scalpel, which was conveniently left by his bed. Weird for a guy that you're going to torture and who clearly thinks you're the enemy, and cuts his own life support with the scalpel, ending his own life. So, honorable death by Mr. McCleary.
By the way, great plan to start. We're going to take the guy we've been training to be like a ninja and sneak around, and we're going to pair him with a 90-year-old grandfather, and we're going to say, you're going to come on, and you have no training, sir.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, that plan destined to be successful.
Remo, what are you worried about? We sent you the guy with one arm. What, do you want us to hand you the mission, or can you handle this by yourself? Why don't you act like a big boy? Okay.
And by the way, that special effect, once again, they obviously put all the prosthetic special effects into the yellow face, because yeah, definitely can't tell that it's just his arm tucked in a jacket.
He goes back to give the information to Harold, and Harold, obviously played by the great Wilford Brimley, says this.
Harp.
Still sitting.
The so-called cornerstone of defense for this nation for the next decade.
What about it?
What about it? There is none. Doesn't exist.
But I saw the damn thing. It blew up in my face.
I know. But what you saw was a fake. It was window dressing. It was a pipe dream. It doesn't exist. And before you got close enough to figure it out, poof, self-destruct.
Classic. In 24 hours, everybody will be Harp. We got to stop this now. And don't trust Clark, whatever you do.
It's the right thing to do. Quaker Oats.
So Remo now has to go take down George Grove and is relishing in that. Grove then talks to Major Raynor, obviously Captain Janeway, and the general, shows him the pics from earlier that she got walking around with Remo, saying that she's a traitor. She says, this is a frame job and these are baseless claims, and I tell you, good day, sir, which always works if you're about to be in front of a military tribunal. Raynor then sees Remo outside and recognizes him from before.
You know, I could march you into that building and clear this up right now.
You could, but you won't.
Who are you to give me orders, Army Intelligence? You are Army Intelligence, aren't you? It's the AR-60, isn't it? Oh, no wonder I've been having so much trouble getting information. We've been working on the same thing. I'm so sorry. I don't know your name or your rank. Do I salute you?
You salute me.
There you go. So she just very idiotically just gives up that the person they just said was a traitor. He's like, wait a minute, you're really high up. That's what I just figured out in this 2 seconds.
I got to be honest, between her and I, we are both proof that women should not work in the government. Let's be honest.
No comment. All I'll say is
we're
like,
just so useful.
Like, I'll just say, like, Kate Mulgrew is, like, in a different movie. Like, completely different film.
Yes.
Than what else is transpiring around her. She's, like, somewhere else, and she's, like, kind of taking it straight, kind of, like, getting in everything. It's, like, nah.
Well, she's supposed to be, like, almost, like, the love interest and just completely taken away by a sexy Fred Ward. And, I mean, who hasn't been there where you're just, like, God, my fucking, I've lost all my ideas of doing the right thing for my career in the U.S., and I'm just like, but God, Fred Ward is so fucking sexy. I just can't. I get all gaga-eyed over him.
I loved
her in A Few Good Chinamen.
A Few Good Chinamen? Is that what you said?
You can't handle the Chinese truth.
You can't handle the truth. Oh my God, I'm going to hell.
Can we?
Yes.
Yes,
Chris.
Did you read up on the trivia that said that Fred Ward actually beat out Bruce Willis for this part?
He did. Yeah. Because Bruce Willis was an untested actor, obviously only in Moonlighting up until this point, and they weren't sure. But luckily, he finally did get his big acting action role in Die Hard later in the decade. So
and what was Fred Ward? Fred was what? Escape from Alcatraz? Was that like his big thing up into that
point? Yeah, that's probably his first real role.
Fred
like
Ward
weird...
is famous for just looking like an uglier version of Charles Bronson his entire career.
Which, by the way, second to Eastwood in that movie is Larry Hankin, who is the guy that runs the salvage yard in Breaking Bad lately. And Better Call Saul. But I'm very big into Hankin. I just met him. He was in Amazon Women on the Moon. And when Ed Begley thinks he's naked, and as the Invisible Man, he thinks he's naked, he's like, "Oh, look, here comes the Invisible Man again." Although he's not really invisible, he's just naked. So.
Well, you bring up an important point, though, Jeremy, because I actually didn't think about that, because you said that Bruce Willis was originally, did you say he was originally slated, or they were considering him for the role?
He was considering. And I think like there's like a weird universe somewhere where Fred Ward actually did the Die Hard series, and Bruce Willis was Remo Williams. And even worse is seeing Fred Ward as like the Sixth Sense guy. Like, I've been dead all along. What the hell's going on here? So.
Well, and that would mean let's keep going. Let's keep going. That would mean then that Bruce Willis plays David Spade's father in Joe Dirt.
or actually saves Ving Rhames in Pulp Fiction. So.
Oh yeah.
Well, but the reason I pointed it out though is because. Had Bruce Willis done this movie, who did we say was in both this movie and Die Hard? The guy playing the cop. Who did we say that was? Not Wilson.
The guy who makes the funny noises from Police Academy.
No, that's no. Reginald Bell Johnson. You're thinking Michael Winslow.
Full name?
Michael Winslow, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that's what I'm saying. Like, how weird is that Bruce would have done this movie or could have done this movie, but then he goes on to do Die Hard, and that actor is literally in both of these films. Like, I love that 6 degrees, 7 degrees shit. I always find it fun.
Oh, and another one.
Actually, a 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. And by the way, Fred Ward ends up being with Kevin Bacon in Tremors. Boom. We just wrapped it.
Shit. Damn. Holy shit. You're right. Holy fuck. That
How
is
can
a,
we tie Michael Gross into
call.
This? But
he
by the way.
On a TV show with Kate Mulgrew at some point, right? I mean, like, come on. I mean, like, wasn't she on an episode of Growing? What was the show that Michael Gross was on? Not Growing Pains.
Just the seven of us. Eight is enough.
It's the one with Michael J. Fox was on it.
Oh yeah,
it
yeah.
Growing pains.
Yeah, it was Growing Pains. Yeah, Michael.
No, it was. It's Family Ties. So
Family Ties.
I was trying to help because you're all a lot older than me, and I was trying to act like I knew what you were talking about.
Which is ironic because on Family Ties, he's the young Republican, but then he graduates to being the Stephanopoulos character on Just Shoot Me or whatever the one.
Spin City.
Spin City, yeah.
I got up to piss for 1 minute, and we're talking about Spin City. Are you fucking kidding me right now? I trusted you with the sanctity of this show.
You heard our episode of Motel Hell. Are you kidding me?
If you were pissing for that time, you have a prostate issue,
Eric.
Dude,
there was so much piss in me. Well, there's fucking 48 ounces of beer been coursing through my veins that I've ingested during this. There's got to go somewhere.
You know what you should do? You should take your finger and rub it on your wrist and pulse, and then that'll help you with all that alcohol in your veins.
I'm about to bust. So
did y'all see the story on how Michael J. Fox is not really learned in internet talk?
No, I didn't see that, but I'm sure you'll tell us.
Because he's on some chat, and some troll is talking shit about how he has Parkinson's and everything. And apparently his son shot to Michael J. Fox. He's just like, just type in SMF. And he's like, what? Like, SMF, okay. I'm like, oh, okay. And then finally Michael J. Fox realized he typed in, the guy's like, oh, dude, Michael, I fucking respect you now. You're so fucking awesome. He's like, what did you tell me? Like, oh, you told me to just type in shaking my head. So.
SMH.
And that's SMH.
By the way, though, would that really happen, or would Michael J. Fox like do unless he had sticky keys enabled, and then
that rocks.
Oh, I'm going to hell for that one.
The worst thing is that he thought that like stem cells would help him, so he's just eating like raw babies every day.
That is true. That is the dark side of Michael J. Fox nobody talks about.
I thought it would heal my disease.
So, anyway.
Why do you think I was so good at playing guitar and just strumming that same chord over and over and over again like Chuck Berry? Oh, I'm going to fucking hell.
After that scene, we're back there. She now knows that he's Army intelligence, or at least that's what she thinks. She brings him along to go see the AR-60 tests, meets up with some goons that work for Grove Industries, but it's all fucking a setup as they lead him into a pressurized chamber and lock them in and start pumping gas in. As they're slowly being poisoned, Rayner collapses, and the Diamond Goon decides this is his chance to go lay the smackdown on old Remo Williams. He throws on a gas mask and enters the chamber and starts fucking up Remo. But Remo quickly rips off his mask and then uses the guy's diamond face to make a giant scratch in the glass. The guy puts his mask back on and he fucking plucks his eye out through the glass mask. Luckily, all it took was like 3 or 4 hours of touching that Korean board to give the dexterity to his fingertips to rip out a man's eyeball from its socket, and then uses the scratched glass from the diamond tooth to jump through the window, saving he and Major Rayner's life.
Top three mouth, like gross, like oh my god, like moments. This one with the tooth against the glass, the other one when they pull the woman across the threshold in Dogma after they kill her at the beginning, like the hockey kids, and the number one worst mouth like thing ever is of course the curbing in American History X.
Ooh, wow.
So this is in the pantheon.
I wouldn't even make
like that sound of the tooth against the glass.
No, I don't even put this near there. There's way worse teeth things. I would go number one, the movie The Dentist, where they actually make giant teeth to like make this drilling scene of just like this guy's tooth getting drilled out, which is horrific to watch. I would go number two for me.
Burnson.
Yeah, Corbin Burnson, The Dentist. But the second one I would say is The Human Centipede 2, where he starts knocking the one lady's teeth out with just the hammer like this, like going tink, 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 tink. That is one of the most fucking brutal things I've ever seen. And then number three, I'm going to go American History X. That's my top on that. So
the most visceral for me has to be 70s Alice, Sweet Alice, where a woman is on top of a guy and just beating his teeth out with a brick.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I didn't come correct at all on this one, guys.
Dude, get
but
right
we didn't go through any of the Jaws scenes with Richard Kiel from the 007 films, where he's like biting live wires and everything.
It is true. That is true. So, Rayner
and Happy Gilmore when he bites off Shooter Gavin's dick.
So Rayner and Remo are on the run now, and he wants to take it his way.
Listen, I hate to pour rank on you, but I want Grove Industries as bad as you do, right? Okay, let's do it my way. Neat and tidy. All wrapped up in one package. Now, how does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
So
I hate when Eric laughs like that, I'm so uncomfortable. No, don't.
And then Voyager dies.
I like that's Captain Janeway's sexy laugh.
Don't do it. Like, I feel the way you feel when I call you daddy.
So right after that, he runs into Chun, who is checking him out from behind a tree, and he's mad at him for that he didn't notice him earlier, and that he's talking to a woman on top of that. And here's a little bit of Chun and probably his best, some of his best work in the film here.
Pleasure to meet you, too.
Even worse, you and the woman. Watching stuff on streets.
Excuse me, but I do have a name.
Women should stay home and make babies.
Oh, my God.
Finally, a man that supports my point of view.
I see you both went to the same charm school.
Oh, he always talks like that. He's Korean.
Oh, I see. And that explains why he lives in the forest.
No, actually, he's here for a special purpose. To kill me.
Not so. I am here to see that you do not bring shame to the house of Shinanju.
And if I do, then you kill me.
That I would do reluctantly because you have been a good pupil. That I would do reluctantly, but I would do reluctantly, but would do reluctantly because you have been a good pupil for a white man.
Oh, I see. So that makes everything okay, doesn't it?
Anyway, I just wanted to really point out the great... That is a Golden Globe nominee, fucking Joel Grey right there.
Did anybody notice who filled in for Joel Grey on the TV series?
No, I didn't see that.
I didn't even... He didn't even look any bit different. They replaced it with Roddy McDowell.
Oh, nice. Oh, I like that God. They re-whitewashed that role.
And he sounded exactly the same. Exactly the
they
same.
They double downed on it. They double down. They're like, you know what? Let's do it.
You know, Roddy McDowell is not only a great actor because he can play an ape or a Korean.
That is true.
Yeah,
that
exactly. True. You can play a monkey. You can play an Asian.
You can dodge a bullet. You can dodge a wrench. So they
or a waiter on a ship. So
the gang ends up stealing some hillbillies' truck as they go to make their way back towards the base again. But there's no brakes on the truck because that's what the hillbillies were trying to fix, you dullards. And they start heading down out of control down the mountain. They end up having to jump out of the car, and the car rolls down the hill in epic exploding fashion. But Chun is still inside. They rush down to the wreckage, and let me tell you, Remo Williams is very concerned about Chun.
Oh, God. Chun.
So he gets down there and finds that in the wreckage, Chun is still within there. And Chun looks up and he goes,
"In Korea, door handles do not break."
Open Gangnam Style. Anyway, so there's Chun, who's survived a horrible car accident, is just completely unscathed. He then gets out. Remo is gonna go back the rest of the way on foot and just starts running through the woods. But obviously, there's guys with AR-60s, which is the most dangerous. It's four times more deadlier than an AR-15 is an AR-60. So the gang is out there hunting him down, and the army gets eyes on him, and then just commence to start blowing up the forest with C4, which they already...
Commence pattern.
So they just start blowing up trees that they've just like, oh yeah, we have already planted explosives everywhere in the forest because we watched Return of the Jedi and we were like, you know what's going to happen if these little fucking bear things walk into our woods? We're going to blow them to fucking hell because we're the stormtroopers.
We're like, take this, Greenpeace.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we better pilot like piles of tree trunks so that just in case an AT-AT ST comes by, we can take it out.
Yes, yes.
You know what holiday we don't celebrate here on Fort Baxter? Arbor Day.
So, Remo.
You know, some people call the movies like the Ewok Adventures. I call them the Teddy Bear Wars.
Oh, that sounds so much like a cuter way to watch beloved childhood creatures die before your eyes.
Starring Wilford Brimley.
I think it was the first time I cried in a movie.
Yeah, hell yeah, Wilford.
I think it's the first time I cried in a movie is when I saw one of the Ewoks die and I saw the other Ewok was sad that the Ewok was
dead. Ewoks dies.
God damn it, Wicket.
So
at least we need for 3 or 4 to die to make ourselves a new jacket.
All right, Jeremy, you don't need to riff anymore. Calm yourself. So look, they keep going down. Remo then hitches a ride on a logging cable that is taking just its job is to just take logs up a mountain. He hops on that, and George, who's now with one of the grunts, tells him to open fire on that, but he doesn't want to open fire on it because that doesn't seem right, and he fucking knocks out a soldier and starts shooting the hell out of this log that Remo Williams is on. He's able to hide on the other side of it, climbs to the top, fucking drops it on another stack of logs that then comes down and crashes into the Jeep and sends it toppling over a thing, killing some probably good soldiers in the process, but whatever. He's part of the nobody gets away with it 11th commandment.
Which, by the way, is exactly how I play Call of Duty and barely ever kill anybody.
Yes, yes. And the logs come crashing down and just immediately it's... And he's fucking, he's crushing it. There's just cheesy music playing left and right. As he goes to walk down, George finds his way, and he's survived the crash somehow, because apparently just dying in a horrible car accident is not even a possibility in this film. He starts, he mentions that I'll probably get a medal for shooting you. And of course, as he tries to shoot him, he evades the bullets, just like Chun taught him. He ends up grabbing the gun, just like Chun did, and unloads it and clicks all the bullets out of it, and we hear this there.
Remo Williams.
Yes, he's Remo Williams. And then as he walks away, he uses like he rubs two sticks together so hard that it makes fire. Understand? So he makes friction fire in his hands, and then throws the stick that then blows up the car that blows up George and fucking saves the day. Wow.
By the way, he definitely cool guys don't look at explosions. This whole entire part
he does that. This guy is just ready. I mean, nothing spells masculine sexuality like a Fred Ward making fire with his hands and
just walks away, doesn't even look at the explosion.
So he rushes back to Chun and Rainer as they're trying to escape on a boat, but a battalion of men is closing in on them, and just as they're about to close in on them, Chun is not at the dock yet, and he's can't get onto the dock because there's soldiers over there. So what does Chun do? He fucking E.T. style runs like Jesus across the water to get to the boat. Is he E.T.? Is he Jesus? Is he just a white guy in yellow face? Nobody really knows. He is a magical Asian white man that can just do this.
When you see one set of footprints, you know that a float carried you.
So, I want to say that this movie was produced by Reverend Sung Young Moon.
So they're able to escape, but oh, wait. Here we go.
Dr. Meary told him so because he hoped to get a new wing for the hospital from his stepmother.
Sean, you're incredible.
No, I am better than that.
Sean, how is he? He's just incorrigible. And that brings us to an end of Remo Williams, the 1985 classic with Fred Ward.
Tomorrow belongs to Chun.
Yes, tomorrow is Martin Luther Chun Day when we're recording this.
Oh my God.
And I don't know if that's accurate, but you know, celebrate it how you want to. It's America. You can feel however you want to in these day and age. Chris, what are your final takeaways of Remo Williams?
Watching it in my later years, I go, yeah, you really appreciate the yellow face of the whole thing and realize, wow, what you're watching is something pretty terrible. But other than that, dude, I like it. I think it's definitely a product of its time. I like the Wilford Brimley. I do like, honestly, I do like Fred Ward. I think that the Statue of Liberty set piece is awesome. That's a great piece of action, I think. Actually, the movie probably should have ended at the Statue of Liberty, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
I thought the base stuff was kind of bleh. Like, maybe that could have been middle when he waxes Patrick Kilpatrick. Like, then you'd be like, oh, yeah, the training is really taking hold. And then you end it on the Statue of Liberty. But you know what, man, I'm in for it. I also do like the main title music. I do think the main fanfare, like dun, 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 I think that's good. But you can obviously see why this movie was never going to spawn a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you probably read online, Shane Black has been circling this property, and there's a rumor that a movie called The Destroyer will be made based on the book. So that's exciting.
Honestly, yeah,
it's a good movie.
That sounds like the most Shane Black project as a Shane Black project could be, right? A blue collar guy who's basically James Bond. That is his cup. That is his fucking bread and butter as far as writing goes.
Yeah, I mean, the movie's going to take place during Christmas, and there will 100%. Be a hooker that jumps out of a high rise building for sure. And, dude, honestly, like, this whole series of books is like the most dad of dad books, and it's the kind of book you buy in an airport before you fly 3.5 hours across the country. You read the book on the plane. I mean, that's what this is. You know what? And I'm in for it. I love it. But the movie didn't do the books justice, but I still like the movie.
Well, that's good. Chris, where can people find you at? What's happening with Sea-Law Comedy?
I'll be on a bunch of Zoom shows, I told you about a project that I'm starting, Eric. I'll be announcing that soon. I'm very excited about it.
Why can't you just announce it now? Announce it to the world, because we want to promote that. Tell them about the project. Let it out of the bag. Make it a debut here.
It all started, as you guys know, I have a love for a certain film series called The Crow.
Oh,
and I've decided I kind of built on the idea of me talking about that, the whole franchise. And then I thought, hey, I'm going to talk about different movie franchises, movie by movie at a time, and go through it. And it's the name of the podcast, because we don't have enough podcasts
about movies and local Baltimore comedians between you, well, me, Migs,
yeah, well, and I'm not going to talk
you're
so much
getting
about
into
the comedy.
You're getting into the foray. You're getting into the movie podcast game.
It's called Franchise It.
Franchise It? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me you and Steve Francis talking about movies, the franchise.
No, it's just Chris Lawrence by himself bringing in a guest every couple of weeks. So that's what it is.
Well, I'm excited about that, Chris. I hope I get the invite. That's where I want to be. Can I be on? Can I be the guy? Can I come and do The Crow City of Angels with you? That's what I would like to do.
No, I'm doing The Crow. It's one guest per franchise. So I'm going to talk four movies with one particular guest.
Okay. You're already locked into it now. There you go, Eric. You get to do all four.
Well, I can't. I
just know, Eric, you could pick a different franchise. The Crow is already spoken for.
Can we do The Human Centipede?
Okay, you're in.
There are three of them.
Can I suggest some guests for your podcast?
Yes.
Since you can't get Brendan Lee, you can get like Brendan Fraser.
And
also get the guy who plays Fraser.
Hey, do you like Brendan Lee or do you like that? Well, we got Brenna Lee, local comedian, Brenna Lee Brennan. So there you go.
I was thinking about cameoing in oh my God, why am I blanking on his name
Joe Pantoliano?
No,
Robinson.
Oh my God, I feel Ernie Hudson. I was going to think about cameoing in Ernie Hudson and paying, you know, $5 a minute to talk to him about The Crow. Be like, no. I know you want to wear the Ghostbuster suit, but can we talk about The Crow?
I think you should get him on and just talk about The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, The Wizard of Oz, not the show
crow.
Oz.
Can we talk about the substitute, Ernie?
Yeah.
Can we talk about your work in The Substitute?
I personally think he's one of the shining stars of the movie Congo as well. So let's not throw that in the fucking trash.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
Ashley, where can people find you? Oh, I'm sorry, Chris, website and all that bullshit where people can follow you?
Just everything on social media is at Claw Comedy.
So check that out. Ashley, where can people find you at, love?
You can always find me online at Ashley Pontius Laughs, and you can catch Eric and I March 11th. We are doing a benefit show for Save Our Stages at McGoobies.
Yeah,
so
that's all. You can go get tickets. That's all put together by the great Ashley Pontius. You put a lot of work into that, and we're really happy that you put that together. It's a big step for her, so come out and support that. I will be there, not because I'm getting paid, because she's my dearest friend. Of course, you can catch all things.
You're not getting paid. That's awesome.
Oh, I'm not getting paid? Sweet. It is for real charity.
It is for charity.
All right. Well, you can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Links to the show in our store. Jeremy, take us out.
Ericomism. It's cabaret. It's cabaret. It's cabaret. I'm Asian.